Our guest on this latest lockdown episode of Soundtracking is a director, writer, producer and actor who's worked on a wide range of projects, including Late Night, Mr. Robot and Girls, and won a Golden Globe for the TV series Transparent. Nisha Ganatra's latest film is The High Note, which is out on home entertainment format as of today, starring Diana Ross's daughter, Tracy Ellis Ross, Dakota Johnson, Kelvin Harrison Jr. and Ice Cube. Tells the story of a PA to a famous singer who wants to become a producer. Now, as well as loads of classic needle drops, The High Note features plenty of original tunes too, mostly sung by Tracy, amongst them Stop for a Minute.
Good, how are you?
Really great, thank you so much. Nice to meet you virtually.
Nice to meet you virtually. I'm going to try to get, let me see if I've got this all happening right. Okay, we're on
Zoom. Yeah, you good?
I've got the ear pod.
You can hear me. Amazing. Isn't technology great that we can still do this?
Amazing. Look at your awesome home studio. Is this, I'm assuming this is home.
This is home. Yeah. I've kind of accumulated all my bits and stuck them. You know, it was kind of good. It was an excuse to tidy up my room a bit. And, you know, yeah. Listen, congratulations on the film. It is absolutely brilliant.
Oh, thank you. Oh, my God. Thank you. That's so nice.
To be honest, I didn't know much about the film going in. And I really like that when you kind of go in with, you know, nothing to kind of cloud it in any way, apart from the fact that I loved people who were in it. And I know what you've done in the past. So it was kind of, you know, it was kind of, I was joining good company and oh my God, it's got everything in it. You know, I cried, I laughed, I sung along to TLC No Scrubs.
I'm so happy to hear that.
A scrub is a guy that thinks he's fly and is also known as a buster. Always talking about what he wants and just sits on his broke ass soul. Don't show love. Oh, yes, son. I'm talking to you. Wanna get with me with no money? Oh, no, I don't want no one.
I imagine a lot of that was on the page in terms of the script, but you really need those special individuals to bring it to life and that collaboration to bring it to life, both the relationship that you have with your crew, but your cast as well, to give them, the confidence and the to kind of play with it a bit.
Yeah, it was just a really fun movie. I mean, not just because it's like, you know, of course it's Tracy Ellis Ross's film debut and also her vocal debut, which it was really beautiful to learn that she actually had wanted to sing her whole life and then felt intimidated because her mom was Diana Ross. So she was like, I'm not doing that. I'm going to pivot over to acting. And then obviously made a brilliant career as an actress. And I think she just decided, like, you know, okay, now's the time. I'm going to do a movie. Not only may I do a movie, I'm going to do a movie and sing in the movie and play a music icon.
1, 2, 3, 4.
To me, it was just this beautiful story of, you know, not only just like how fun it is to be in our industry, like you see these music movies and they're always like a little bit depressing sometimes, like the addiction, or then they, you know, go into death and depressing and it gets very serious. And I was like, but it's fun too. It's really fun to be a musician. It's really fun to be in the arts. It's really like a beautiful industry. And so it really, when I read Flora's script and it had these two women and it was really funny and very moving, and it just felt like, oh, you know, this is a fresh take on the assistant icon dynamic. And then also for me, like with Dakota's character Maggie, to really find this woman that wanted to be a producer, because I feel like young women are always told, like, you want to be in front of the camera, you want to be on stage, you want to get the followers, you want to get the likes. And this was like, I always felt like, no, you want to be a part of the creative process. That's what you want. Like, that's the big goal, is to like live a creative life, right? So I love that the message in this is, you know, get out there, be a part of it, follow your dreams, work really hard. And it's just like the fact that the two of them come together to sort of be a stronger force for each other. I'm always a fan of movies where it's like, you know, women can support each other or we could be each other's worst enemies. And I really love when it's like, hey, to try to support each other.
Yeah.
We got enough enemies. Like, we don't need to really hold each other back. There's room at the table for everyone.
Yeah, I think that that's what one of the many things I loved about it was that kind of female perspective and empowerment that kind of came out of it on so many levels, you know, in terms of how it's almost kind of, if you open yourself up to actually listening to that person, whoever it may be, it's amazing what you can take from that situation. And, you know, and with Tracy's character, you know, it obviously takes her a bit of time to actually realize that she needs to listen. She has this person right next to her who's hugely influential. And I love that dynamic. Those two are fantastic on screen together.
Oh my God. They really have a good chemistry. It's true. And so does Kelvin. Kelvin Harrison Jr. comes on there and just lights up the whole screen with all of them. And Ice Cube comes and steals the show every time he's in there.
There are some great lines in there as well.
Who
the hell do you think you are, Missy Elliott? And then there was another one as well. Oh, one of my favorite lines is, I opened the Adele basket.
Yes, I'm so glad you caught that.
there's so many little... I've been part of the music industry for a long time. I was a DJ at Radio 1 for a very long time. And I got a lot of friends. And weirdly, my friend runs a label that Adele's on and things. So it's kind of, there's so many.
She's like the nicest person in the world.
So nice.
Yeah.
So nice. But there's so many little.
We had a joke, it didn't make it into the movie, where the card and the gift basket from Adele says, I'm so sorry I stepped on your foot. Please forgive me. It's like she sends this huge basket to Grace Davis. And it's just, we just had so much fun with the music.
It feels so true, though. That's what's great about it, in terms of, it feels like it's been written by someone who really has a bit of an insight into that world, because there's a real love of music as a kind of thread throughout it as well, obviously with Maggie's character and with her dad and that relationship and stuff. But there's even like with that conversation about the Springsteen album, you know, kind of Wrecking Ball versus Thunder Road and all that kind of stuff. There's a real purity of love of music as part of the narrative.
For sure. Flora Greeson wrote this beautiful script that is just I'm so glad you said it. It's just an ode to, like, you know, talent and the beauty of music. And really the first thing I did when I read it was I made a playlist and played the music in order of the songs that were in the movie to see how they supported each scene. And she just really is that. Like, she is incredibly thoughtful. She's from a different era, it feels like, even though she's 28 years old. She just wrote this love song to these hits and these women and this music and this time. And yeah, it really comes through.
What took Tracy so long to do her first film and to kind of show off that vocal talent that she's got as well? I know I watched her do a little Instagram live thing the other night where she was playing her track for the first time. So sweet. You know, you can tell how excited she was. This is something she's wanted really for her entire life. What do you think persuaded her that this was the right project to do that with?
You know, I think she just hit a moment in her life where she achieved what she wanted to achieve in television and was ready to sort of take the risk to do something on the big screen. I'm surprised and thrilled that she picked a part where she would be singing so much.
There are things I know that I should have said that I couldn't say to you. I've been hiding in my tower of strength, and there's no room in there for two.
I think she's just one of those artists that when she sets her mind to it, she does it. You know, she's sort of single focus and gets it done. But there was this amazing young woman named Sarah Ahrens, who was our songwriter, who, when we were picking the songs for the movie, she came through. She sort of had every hit song on the radio. And I met her and she gave me like three demos and I listened to them and I was like, I love all of them. And I said, I also am looking for a song that, you know, Grace Davis may have written at this period of time. And she went home that night and the next day said, oh, I wrote something here. What do you think of this? And I was like, great, that's the song. So suddenly it became the sound of the movie was really her. I really heard her as Maggie's producer voice. And so Sarah brought to it this fantastic, high quality music. And Rodney Jerkins, of course, our music producer, who's a legend, he really could bring out in Tracy this this voice. Like, I think he said to her, you know, because we hadn't heard Tracy sing when we cast her. And
no
so
way.
Rodney and I went to the studio. Yeah.
I mean, what if she'd said, been awful?
If she had been awful, I would have had her lip sync. Because <Okay. laughs> she's still a brilliant actress.
Yes.
So I really had that in my back pocket. I was like, all right, well, we have this brilliant, like, you know, Rodney, who knows so many amazing singers. And
yeah.
By the way, I did not know this about the music industry, but a lot of time those brilliant singers are on your favorite singer's album as that singer. And the singer themselves isn't singing their whole song on their album, which was a really interesting behind the scenes piece of knowledge I had zero idea about. So I kind of had that in my back pocket. I was like, well, we can do our movie magic. Yeah. But then we played it and we heard Tracy sing, and Rodney and I just looked at each other and we almost cried because she sounds so beautiful.
Yeah.
He was sad. He was like, I'm sad you hid this from the world for so long.
I know.
And that was such a beautiful moment. Yeah.
Gray and winding slowly makes me uneasy.
you can kind of understand, though, can't you, when your mum's Diana Ross, that you're kind of, you know, it's like, yeah, I can sing, but my mum, you know, I can totally understand why she felt slightly apprehensive about it. Oh my God, she must be so proud of her, you know, to the fact that she's this kind of double whammy that she's done and she's delivered.
Oh my God. I have to say, like, we, in prep, we went to a Diana Ross concert together, me, the producer, the writer, a couple of the actors and Tracy. And just, I mean, I was just watching Tracy watch her mom. And just to understand, when you see Tracy in the audience singing along to her mom on stage in a concert, you understand the entire dynamic there, you know, and what her childhood was like and her unique perspective on what it's like to be a music icon and how she could bring that to the role in a way no other actress could, you know.
Is that something that you talked about? Because that's I think there's a beautiful kind of almost like fragility that she brings to the character, you know, and I mean, she just, like I said, I think you used the word truth earlier. There feels like there's so much truth in this character. And I wonder if that's something that you talked about in terms of whether she spoke, you know, in depth to her mum. You know, obviously she's witnessed so much stuff, watching an icon grow up as your mother sort of thing, but also just as a person.
We did. We talked about it a lot. And we also talked about the sacrifices women have to make in order to have a career, you know, and what she gave up and at what cost to herself and whether she truly had to give up those things or not, you know, and you know, without giving away the spoiler in the movie, it was like a really beautiful thing to examine just in terms of being women in this industry and how many things you have to sacrifice in order to rise to the top. And the script was very fun and very moving, but I knew if there wasn't like a deeper emotional core that we were following and that I was directing, that it could have just been a fun romp, you know, but I really wanted it to be more than that and just stay with you. My favorite movies, they make you laugh, but they also make you cry, you know, and they say something about the world, even though it's not a messagey movie. Like, I think comedy is the best for that. You know, even now when you look at our political situation, the comedians and the late night talk shows, they're the ones that are saying what needs to be said without any fear, you know, like comedians are sort of the taskmasters of keeping people in line in our, in our governments, you know,
totally
maybe back from the day of the jester, even just the one person who can get away with saying it and not get their head sliced off, you know? So it really feels like that is just part of the thing of a comedy is you can sneak in a message into the movie in a way that nobody really feels lectured to.
Totally.
Go to the movie and feel lectured. Yeah.
There's really interesting the role that music has in the film. Obviously, you know, she's a music icon, but then you have Maggie's character who's, you know, she's obsessed and desperate to be part of this production world. Then you have the needle drops in there, like the TLCs and Scrubs and things like that. But then you also have this score, and that's a really fascinating world for you to navigate your way through. Was that fun? You know, trying to kind of...
I'm so glad you brought up the score. It was this amazing composer named Amy Doherty. And she's got such a tricky job because there was so much source music. There was so much original music. And then we needed score. Of course, every movie needs score. But I was a little lost, to be honest. Like, I was like, okay, well, I think the score should be this sound, you know, and then we'd put in that sound and then it kind of flatlined all the other music because it was too much like R&B, you know? So then we're like, okay, well, and I really thought it should have a big orchestral, like kind of romance because it's a rom-com and a romantic comedy at its heart too. So we went that way. Then it felt like, oh, well, is this two bananas, this world and that world? And then Amy sort of came in with like the best of both. Like she created this sort of old Hollywood like sound with the orchestral music that I wanted that really raised the romance, but then also kind of kept this cool electronica thing that she worked in that was Maggie's producer's theme. And it was just like beautiful. She's so talented. And also to get to work with like a female composer is just, I don't even know. One of them said to me, like, could you name three female composers from film? And I just thought, oh my God, we need to change this. This is awful.
Yeah. I mean, it was amazing this year watching Hilda pick up the Oscar for Joker, you know, and particularly with quite a very masculine story. But I think her performance as a composer is at the heart of that story in terms of the inspiration that her music brought to Joaquin's performance. So it's lovely that full circle that it did as well.
If you took the music out, though, it would be a whole different movie.
Yeah.
It was really, but also her work on Chernobyl. Oh my God. She just like, you know, incredible. Yeah.
We try our best to champion the female composers for sure,
yes.
Definitely. Mika Levy's another one that we love. She's phenomenal. Yeah. Is that part
and
of the
Leslie
job?
Leslie Barber, who did Late Night. Yeah, she's incredible. Well, I think she did Manchester by the Sea, got her all that attention.
Oh, what a film. Yeah. I love the kind of the world that you've been involved in terms of working in the TV side of things, but also in film. And I wanted to ask about when it comes to music with those sort of things, when you're involved in, I mean, you've worked across some extraordinary, you know, kind of series that we've all loved, you know, be it, you know, Brooklyn Nine-Nine or Girls, Mr. Robot and Transparent, all those things. And when you're part of that world where I guess there's a kind of sonic foundation in a way, I guess, but then you can kind of bring your own thing to it as well. And whether it's different to film, if there is a different approach to when you're thinking about music with film.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it is, you know, with film, you're sort of building the whole world from the ground up. And with these amazing series, you have a showrunner that you're collaborating with. I've been really lucky to kind of stay in the more auteur series where they let you do your own thing and go for it. And I, especially Girls, I remember, because at the time Lena was with Jack Antonoff. And so she said, oh, here's a song that he's just working on and we're thinking about using it. And I heard that demo and I just thought, oh my God, we have to definitely, you know. And then there were two songs actually, and she was like, which one do you like? And I, again, said both. And so I kind of blended them. So there's his, you know, one song she's doing in the dance party montage, and then she starts singing a different song and to get us to the other end of it. And just the editor was so fantastic. She really found a way to like blend these two songs in a seamless way. So you don't even notice it's two different songs, I think, at first. But yeah, it's really that thing that I think I first started watching music videos, right? That's what made me think, could I make a music video? Could I be like part of this cool industry and do this awesome stuff? And then, you know, you quickly find out, no, you can't make a music video because everybody wants to make a music video because it's really cool and fun. But I interned at this music video place and it was the first place I saw like Tamara Davis and Mary Lambert and Flora, like all the, I mean, just the incredible women doing such cool work, and nobody was saying, oh, here's a female director, or here's that. They were just doing it. And I think that kind of was the thing about indie film too, was nobody was saying yes or no, you were just doing it. Like, of course, the lower budget stuff, nobody was holding away from women. but I think that music and how it influences images, and that being the main thing of cinema, has always really interested me, and been the passion was just how it really tells the story. Like you said beautifully with Joker, just without Hildur's score, it really is a different movie.
Remember films for you where the music really resonated, both that, whether that be, you know, needle drops or a score?
Oh my god, yeah. I think like Ang Lee uses music so beautifully, but I remember just in that, when I remember watching The Ice Storm and thinking,
yes,
that silence was used so strongly, that the score and everything was so beautiful, but also the way he held back and let the sound design come through. Watched Crouching Tiger, and just that like beautiful score that came in and just uplifted everything, and then would sort of drop away just for the little tinkles of when they walked on water, you know, and you watch the ripples in the water, and just beautiful like moments like that.
Is is he a bit of an inspiration to you then, Ang Lee, and his filmmaking?
Yeah. I think Ang Lee and Pedro Almodovar were sort of the two movie filmmakers that made me want to get into filmmaking.
Wow.
I saw their movies and just was so blown away by all of them. Obviously, Jane Campion's Piano was like something that score just haunted you and blew you away.
Yeah, such an important part of the story. Again, you know, kind of, you know, we were talking about with your film in terms of the music doesn't have one purpose and one role within the film sort of thing. And similarly with that, you know, it's Holly's character's voice. It's her way of communicating. Yeah. It's so, yeah, it's beautiful score.
That's also, you know, we were sort of talking about how when you get into this industry as like you're just a fan and then you don't know that in 10 or 15 years you're going to be working with the people you've been watching on screen and at a festival with them or, you know, collaborating with them. And
yeah,
I remember when I watched Mansfield Park, I was like, oh my God, this score is phenomenal. Who is Leslie Barber? How in the world did this person exist? And then, like, you know, she was doing the score at a late night. And it was just one of those moments where I was like, if you had told me that not only was I going to, like, get to talk to and meet the person who did this brilliant score, but then work with her, you know, it just is that fun of our industry of, you know, and that's sort of with Maggie and Grace, too, right? Like, starting as a fan, and that's your icon, and now you're her personal assistant, and now you want to produce for her, and you're in this world. And it's really... just one of the unique joys, I think, of our industry.
With Late Night.
You, like, you must have been such a fan of these bands, and then suddenly you're interviewing them, and you're, like,
totally
hanging out with them.
Even things like when I was at uni, and I was, you know, I did a degree in communication studies, and one of the things was film studies. And for my final essay, I wrote about Pulp Fiction, you know, and I went to the cinema to watch it, like, 8 times to write about it, you know. And then cut to, you know, quite a few years later, and I'm interviewing Quentin Tarantino, and it's like, oh my God, this is nuts. This is nuts. But I think when you come from a true place of being a fan of something, I think that enthusiasm kind of really kind of shines through and shows in your work, whether that's behind the camera or, you know, in front of the camera as well. I think that's a thing across the board. I think I hope that people can see and hear. Late Night, though, with that world, I wanted to ask you about that because Leslie's score's brilliant. And I wanted to ask with regards to, you know, those late night shows always have those kind of big kind of brassy theme tunes. And, you know, that's always something that comes with that world, you know. Whatever channel it's on, they've always got a theme tune. And so with Late Night and approaching that and thinking about that, was that quite fun in terms of how yours would sound?
Oh my God. Well, strangely, it was something, I think we shot that movie in 25 days. And
what?
So I was prepping it. I had 4 weeks to prep it. And maybe five. And so it was insane because we were running so fast that suddenly it wasn't until we were building the set for the late night, for the talk show, that it occurred to me that I was going to need this theme song ahead of time because I'd cast a band and I didn't know what musicians to cast in the band. So I called Leslie and I was like, hey, I need a theme song. Could you write one? She was like, what? But of course she just said, sure, no problem. And then I found out later she had like a nervous breakdown when I asked her to write a late night theme song because it's so out of her wheelhouse. But she said she went away and like kind of channeled Paul Schaefer and came back with this like amazing theme song. It was so good that it struck me and Eleanor Infante, the editor, we immediately remembered Broadcast News and how they used just variations on the news theme as the score. And so, and all of us were in the same place, like Leslie, Eleanor, I all kind of came on the idea at the same time, like, can you give us pieces that are all derived from that theme song? So when you listen to the movie, all of Catherine's sort of score pieces are all either slowed down from the theme song or a piano version of it, or it's all informed by that theme song. It's the unifying music of the movie, which really makes it this very satisfying movie, I think. That is the best. Like, it's such a collaborative art when you have the best cinematographer and designer and costumes and makeup and hair and the music, and everybody comes together and this vision really like rises up to everything, the writing and the acting. And it's just so satisfying to like feel like this is one piece of art that is just complete and its own thing and no randomness sort of snuck in there.
Yeah. Well, listen, I have to let you go, I'm afraid, but what a treat to chat to you, and congratulations on the film again. I really thought it was fantastic. I'm really excited to see what's next. And I really hope that when we're allowed out, Tracy's going to like go and perform this, these songs somewhere so we can like go and sing along and cheer and clap for it. And our mum can be watching her sing.
Oh my God, that's such a good idea. We should just do like the High Note musical tour and have her just singing everything. You know, when she sang it live on Instagram, her mom was on the feed. So like suddenly you're watching her about to play her song and you see the Diana Ross and it says, "Mom's here." And we were all like, oh my God, what's happening? And then I got really nervous for her.
She did great.
But yeah. Her
she
mom was so
well.
Sweet. She was like, "I love you, honey. I'm so proud of you." And it was really, so moving.
We were supposed to have, I live not that far from Glastonbury. And so we were supposed Diana was supposed to be playing Glastonbury this year, which has been, had to be cancelled obviously because of the COVID and stuff as well. But Lady Sings the Blues is one of the first films that I remember watching and just blown away by her in that film and her portrayal as, another iconic female artist. But I could talk for hours about it. But
you're such a fan. This is so amazing. You're so knowledgeable and you obviously love what you do.
Oh, I do. I love it. And I hope when you come across next time, we can do this face to face and talk some more. So great to chat to you, Nisha. Have a great day. Take care. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Taking her in. She's on the line. to know just what a blues is all about. The blues ain't nothing but a pain in your heart when you got a bad start. You and your man have to part. Lady Sings the Blues.
From Lady Sings the Blues, that's the title track rounding off this latest episode of Soundtracking with the wonderful Nisha Ganatra. My huge thanks to Nisha for joining us in lockdown. The High Note is available on home entertainment formats as of today, and I mean it when I tell you I thoroughly enjoyed it. We'll put a Spotify playlist up for the show, which you can access via edithbowman.com. My website is also the place to catch up with every single episode, including my chats with Ang Lee, Pedro Almodovar and Quentin Tarantino. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. We are at Soundtracking UK, and please do subscribe to our YouTube channel to catch a little weekly show that I'm putting together. And last week's show featured none other than the one and only Tracy Ellis Ross herself. She is formidable. Next week on the show, we chat more film and music. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then. In the meantime, stay safe.